This morning we'll be in Ruth chapter 3. Ruth chapter 3. This is not a very big book, just four little chapters, but it has the entirety of the gospel in it. It has the entirety of the depths of Mount Zion in it. It has the fullness of the maturity of the third day in it. It has the perfection of the third day. Has all these wonderful things in here. And by the blessing of God, and by the grace of God, He has let our eyes see some of this beauty. It's just a blessing to see how much God has compacted into a few little words on a piece of paper. Put so much life into it. I'm just so awed all the time at it. This past week, we know there's been a lot of problems. We've had a lot of situations in our lives, and with the loss of our grandson, it was very difficult, at best, to say difficult is the best I can say, for me to go back to my normal way of my study and the time of fellowship with God and the meditation in His Word because of the things that was in my mind about our grandson. But as I began to deal with the situations that God had given us to deal with, I went back into the Word. And you know, our mind is so quick, and I'm saying these things because you feel the same things I feel. We're no different from each other. We might have different names, and we may look different on the outside, but inside we have the same spirit. And it makes no difference whether we're male or female in the suit we wear. We're the same inside. And my mind spoke to me and said, you've been away too long. You haven't been talking to Him. In your time of grief, you've went too far. And as I began to open the Word, my mind began to struggle with me. And I stopped for a moment and I realized what was going through my mind. And I was beginning to agree with it. And I realized I was beginning to agree with this mind that was telling me, well, you went this far, but that's as far as you're going because you blew it. You just let your flesh go wild. I don't think I have. I think I've restrained myself, my flesh, very well at this time of grief. But my mind still talks to me, and your mind talks to you, every one of us. And as I realized that, I just said, that's a lie. I said it verbally, vocally. I said it out loud. There was no one else in the house. As I set him off, I said, that's a lie. My God has not forsaken me. And I began to look at the Scriptures, and they become alive in a way I've never seen before. And with God's grace this morning, I'll show it to you. It's fantastic. Chapter 3, verse 1. Then Naomi, her mother-in-law, said unto her daughter, shall I not seek rest for you, that it may be well with you? And now is Boaz our kindred, with whose maidens thou wast. Behold, he winnows barley tonight in the threshing floor. Wash yourself, therefore, anoint yourself, and put up your raiment upon you, and get you down to the floor, but make not thyself known unto the man until he shall have done eating and drinking. It shall be when he lies down that thou shalt mark the place where he shall lie, and you shall go in and uncover his feet and lay thee down. And he will tell you what you shall do. And she said unto her, all that thou sayest unto me, I will do. And she went down unto the floor and did according to all that her mother-in-law bade her. And when Boaz eaten and drunk, and his heart was merry, he went to lie down at the end of the heap of corn. And she came softly and uncovered his feet and laid her down. And it came to pass at midnight that the man was afraid and turned himself, and behold, a woman lay at his feet. And he said, who art thou? And she answered, I am Ruth thy handmaiden. Spread therefore thy skirt over thy handmaid, for thou art a near kinsman. And he said, Blessed art be thou of the Lord, my daughter, for you have showed more kindness in the latter end than it is the beginning, insomuch as thou followest not young men, whether rich or poor. And now, my daughter, fear not, I will do to you all that thou requirest, for all the city of my people does know that you are a virtuous woman. And now it is true that I am thy near kinsman, howbeit there is a kinsman nearer than I. Tarry this night, and it shall be in the morning that he will perform unto you the part of the kinsman well, if he do it well. Let him do the kinsman's part, but if he will not do the part of a kinsman to you, then I will do it, the part of the kinsman unto you, as the Lord liveth. Lie down until the morning. And she lay at his feet until morning, and she rose up before one could recognize another, and he said, let it not be known that the woman came into the floor. Also he said, bring the veil that thou hast upon you, and hold it. And when she held it, he measured 6 measures of barley, and laid it upon her. And she went into the city, and when she came to her mother-in-law, she said, who art thou, my daughter? And she told her all the man had done to her. And she said, these 6 measures of barley gave he me, for he said to me, go not empty unto thy mother-in-law. Then said she, sit still, my daughter, until thou know how the matter will fall, for the man will not be in rest until he has finished the thing this day. O God. Oh, so much richness in here. Back to the first verse. We ended up the second chapter with Boaz giving instructions. So she kept fast by the maidens of Boaz to glean until the end of the barley harvest and of wheat harvest. That's Pentecost. See, we can't stop at Pentecost, can we? We have to go on through wheat harvest, which is tabernacles, with her mother-in-law. Okay? Her mother-in-law is the religious side, the Pentecostal side, which covers Passover and Pentecost. And then Naomi, which is the one that means pleasant or my delight. And notice that God has still not given up on Naomi, has he? God has continually called Naomi, although she called herself, don't call me Naomi, call me Mara. But he says, Naomi. God never refers to her in what she believes in her mind, in her lost, mistaken identity. Even though she claims herself to be Mara, bitter, God says, you're Naomi. God knows your beginning, and he's not going to accept what your mind tells you. You might accept it temporarily. God will not accept what you are. When God created you, if he created you Naomi, what is your name? It's Naomi. It's pleasant. See? My delight. And God still has a delight in Naomi, even if she thinks she's bitter. Even if she feels God has dealt harshly with her. It doesn't make any difference. God is not impressed by our thinking process. Did you know that? Did you know that? God's not impressed with it. See? He gave it to us, but he knows it's got some flaws in it. See? He gave it to us for a reason. It's okay. But God's not impressed by the things we think about. The thing that impresses God is when we see what he's talking about. We see the truth of it. But Naomi is her what? Mother in the law. In where? In the law. That's where she's at. And see, our Pentecostal friends are our mother. They brought us forth. You know what? But only in the law. You know why? Because Pentecost can't take you beyond the law. Pentecost is the law. Do you hear me? And that's where the church realms are. They can't take you any place other than the law, because that's all they have. They've never come to the Feast of Tabernacles. They've never come to the agape love that God talks about. The unconditional love, regardless of where you are or where you're from, it's okay. Because my book says he's the father of all spirits. Who does that leave out? Nobody. So we have to realize that God is interested in all, but he has a priority in which ones he's picking right now. He's picking first fruit. And he said unto her, Naomi said unto her, my daughter, shall I not seek rest for you? Now see, that's what Pentecost wants to do. Pentecost wants to take you, and they want to do for you. They want to do things for you. My book says to labor and enter into his rest. It doesn't tell me to go out and try to find something to do to help God. True or false? I don't have to look for something to do. I need to obey God. Does that make sense? I have to learn to obey what my Father says. And you know, if my Father decides not to speak, that doesn't mean I can get up and go look for something to do. What should I do? Rest until He speaks to me. See, Pentecost can never sit still. They want to run and do and do and do and do. It's not God. It's their flesh. And she says, shall I not seek, literally seek in prayer, the rest for you? Is that what God really wants for us? See, and that word right there, rest, literally means a home or a settled spot. See, Pentecost thinks they can pray you into heaven. Don't they? Doesn't the church say, oh, we're going to pray that you get to heaven? That can't happen. Heaven is a reality in our hearts right now. I don't have to die to go to heaven, do I? I can walk in the fullness of Christ now. If I don't believe that, then all this is a joke. It's all a farce. If I can't believe the reality of God in my life today, what am I doing? I'm deceiving people if I believe anything other than that. God said now. Didn't He? God said now. What does He mean? He's not meaning future. It's right now. I can walk in this thing right now. I don't need somebody to pray me a spot in heaven. You know why? Because He chose me before the foundation of the world. He chose you before the foundation of the world. Do you understand? If God reserved me a spot, why do I have to have somebody pray to make me a place? Don't make sense, does it? See, so I've got to realize God's already done this thing. And what did Jesus say when He died on the cross? Okay. So He's already reserved a spot. He didn't go up there and make a little log cabin. He reserved a spot in God's heart. That's heaven, see? And He said that they wanted to make this place a rest for you, that it may be well with you. Well, see, I don't have to have the reservation stamped to go to this place up in the sky for me to have rest. You remember the book of Habakkuk, he said to rest in the day of trouble. See, all this is going on so you can have rest in the day of trouble. Well, you know what the day is? The day of trouble. It is. All kinds of trouble is going on. But what am I supposed to do in it? I'm not supposed to run around like a wild person trying to figure out something to do. He said, I'll provide for you. I feed the sparrows. Won't I feed you? I don't have to worry about where my next meal is coming from, do I? I don't have to worry about where my finances are coming from. God is providing those things. That don't mean we all just go vegetate in the house and wait for somebody to bring us money. That's not what He's talking about. We have a purpose in our life, and we go on with our purpose, and God will take care of the details. Just seek the kingdom and His righteousness, and everything else will be what? Matthew 6:33. You've got to believe this thing. You can't just say words. It can't be just intellectual understanding, but I've got to start walking this. So you got to start taking steps in what God has said. Can I control what's going to happen today or tomorrow? Well, why worry about it? Be anxious for what? Nothing. I can't change it, so why worry about it? All that's going to do is create blood pressure problems, you know, hypertension, all these things, you know, stress on our life. We don't need stress, do we? Stress will destroy the flesh, and that's what it's doing. And we're committing suicide when we get in all this stress. We're killing ourselves. Let it go. Verse 2. And now is not Boaz our kindred? Is he? Sure he is. Boaz is who? Christ. Kinsman Redeemer. With whose maidens you were. Now notice she said were. There's a time in our life when we have to separate from those maidens. There's some other maidens there in the field. And you notice that Boaz didn't marry all them maidens, did he? Hello? There's a time when you have to separate even from the ones who are laboring with God. That's okay. God has this thing set up. There's a purpose in it. God makes a choice. And when He chooses His woman, and that woman is the woman that's within you. Hello? Just like we were talking about earlier today, there's a time when God will run people by your life, and that's great. But there's a time when the separation comes, and know that your fullness of life does not come from all these relationships, but it comes from the Christ that's dwelling within you. You see what I'm saying? And she had to come to this place where I don't, even though I love all these other people, but I got to know my fullness is in Him. See, in my man that's within me, my Christ. And your woman has to come to this revelation. And see, Ruth's already had her eye on this man. I'm going to tell you. She's got a gleam in her eye right now. And see, your soul's got to be the same way. And when you realize the Christ that's within you, and you see the beauty that God has placed within your life, you got to get a gleam in your eye. Just like when you've seen your husband for the first time. See? And that's what it really is. Because he's really our husband. See? And he'll never let us go. But this is something that's going on with inside of her. And she's seeing this man. And oh, you can only imagine what she's thinking. You can only imagine. I don't want to put everything in your head. I want you to think it yourself. She says, "Behold, he winnows," right? "Barley tonight in the threshing floor." I can see lots of things in that. He's working where? In the threshing floor, right? What is the threshing floor? It's the Holy of Holies. It's your heart, your innermost being of you. It's your Holy of Holies. And where is he working? In there, right? Now tell me what time of day it was. It was night. It was in a time of ignorance in our life. That's when God begins to work. We don't see God begin to work, do we? Usually when God's doing a work, we don't see it until the end of the day. Look what God did. How many of us open our eyes to see, my God, God's doing something in my heart now. See? He's telling you. You're not going to know when God begins work in your heart. You're not going to know it. Because we're in ignorance. That's why he has to go work in it. But Christ does the work in your heart when you don't know what's going on. If you're just going on about your life and all of a sudden something happens. And people begin to see, my God, that person's changing. They haven't done anything. They haven't been knocking on doors and passing out tracts. But you know what? Something's changing in their lives. That's what we have to realize. But he winnows barley tonight in the threshing floor. What is winnowing talking about? It's sifting. Separating. So he is, in this time of ignorance, what he is doing, he is separating us from Pentecost. See, some people want to live in Pentecost. Well, if that's where your call is, amen, enjoy it. But my call is to tabernacles, and I have to be sifted. I have to be separated from my Pentecostal brothers and sisters for a season. I have to be. The only way that I can change is stand in the Holy of Holies in the presence of God with nobody around me that's going to change me. I can't be changed by somebody else telling me something. I've got to stand in this Holy of Holies myself, and you do too. You've got to come to this place when you realize Boaz is my man. And you've got to have a gleam in your eye for him. And you're going to want to be alone with him and be intimate with him. Isn't that what husbands and wives do? The natural teaches us about the spiritual, Paul said. And we've got to have this desire in your heart to be intimate with him. And most people in Pentecost have no desire to be intimate with Christ. They want to be intimate with his gifts. I don't worry about the gifts. If I got the gift giver living in my heart, I got it all. I'm not focusing on the gifts. That's not my focus or my priority. My priority is Christ. Do you hear me? That's what we got to do. If we have this desire in heart, believe me, you won't have a problem with the rest of it. I got two verses almost, ain't I? Look at the command. Now, even in Pentecost, even in Naomi, she has enough sense to know this. You don't go to God dirty. Look what she said. Wash yourself. Wash yourself. The book of Revelation says the bride has made herself ready. I'm not talking about my physical body. I'm talking about my soul realizing her man and knowing that I've got to prepare myself. Okay? The only way you can be prepared is by the Word of God. You're washed by the water of the Word. You're cleansed
by the words I've spoken to you, he said. So when I go into that intimate time with Christ, guess what happens? He speaks things into my heart, and it cleanses me. There's your washing. Your washing doesn't come in the multitudes like the song we sang today. Take me past the outer courts and the priests that sing your praise into the Holy of Holies. The outer court is just people. The priests that sing your praise. There's your Pentecost. And see, I've got to go on beyond that into the Holy of Holies. I can't be satisfied with anything else. You know why? Because he put it in my heart. It's nothing that I can do. It's nothing that you can do. It's a desire that he has. And when he reveals himself to you, you're going to follow him wherever he wants you to go. He said, wash yourself there and anoint yourself. Put on the oil and put your raiment upon you and get yourself down. Right? Get yourself down to the floor. You know what that's talking about? Humility. Get yourself down there where he's at. God don't have to come to you. Once you know God is, what are you going to do? You're going to follow him. See? You're going to follow him wherever he's at. Wherever he goes, that's where I'm going. Revelation 14 says there's 144,000 having the name of their Father written in their foreheads. And they followed the Lamb whithersoever he went. I don't care if he goes into the sewers. I'll follow him in. It doesn't make any difference. As long as he's there, it's cool. Right? It don't make any difference what's there. As long as he's there. He said, get down to the floor, but don't make yourself known until the man, known to the man, until he's what? Done. He has done, or literally finished, eating and drinking. You know what I see in this? I see the crucifixion. I see the Last Supper. He says, don't reveal yourself to the man until he be done eating and drinking. What did he pray in the garden? Father, if it's possible, take this cup from me. But nevertheless, not my will, your will be done. I can see his crucifixion in here. I can see a dying to myself in this thing and knowing that it's not about what I want to do, it's what my Father wants. Till he gets done eating and drinking. Okay? You can read that in the Gospels. I'm not going there. He says it in Matthew 26. That's one place you can read it. And she says, it shall be. Now let me show you something here. Who's doing this speaking? Naomi represents who? Pentecostal realm. Okay? Pentecost. Guess what? They'll prophesy all kinds of things to you. Prophecy comes out of the root of Pentecost. I have no problem with Pentecost. I have no problem with prophecy. I only have problem with prophecy that isn't Christ-based. It is now the Spirit of God. There's a whole lot of flesh being prophesied. And the only way I'm going to know the difference is if I know God's Word. Does that make sense? I need to know God's Word so it's impossible for me to be deceived. Okay? As long as I know I'm going to be hearing things from people, the only way I can defend myself is by the Word of God. That's all I've got. Okay? And it shall be when he lies down. What do you think that is? No, no. There's the crucifixion. When he lied down, didn't they bury him? Didn't they lay him in the tomb? I can see the crucifixion here in the burial, right here. It was the burial when he lays down. He said, mark the place. Mark the place. This word mark in the Hebrew language is the word yada. It means to know. You know what that tells me? You got to know intimately the place of burial. Burial is something you put dead things in. Right? In a tomb? You're going to have to intimately know with yourself that you are dead. It's not I that liveth, but the Christ that lives within me. You got to intimately know this. It's not something you can talk about. It's something you have to live. You have to walk what you talk. God's not going to accept this intellectual gospel any longer. It's a time when we can no longer pass the baton to another generation because God is requiring it today. It's a generation that will say, no more. No more do I pass the baton I'm going in myself. I'll run the last leg myself. I'm not passing it off. No more of that. They call it the anchor man, don't they? The last leg of the race will be the anchor man. We're going to carry it in. And we're going to run with him. But mark the place where he shall lie, and you shall go in. Ooh. What's it saying? If he's going to die there, where are you going to die? See? Didn't Romans 6 say that you're buried with him in baptism? If he's going there, where are you going? Is there anything that he experienced we're not going to experience? That he experienced everything for us, didn't he? We're going to have to experience the same things in the same pains and rejections. We've got to have it. Okay? And it says, uncover his feet. Well, you know how you're going to uncover his feet? His feet speak of his lifestyle. And the only way you're going to uncover or reveal his lifestyle is to die the same way he died. Can you see it? I can't reveal his lifestyle in me until I have died the same death he died. I got to know this. I got to know this stuff intimately so I can know that when I died in him. That's what Paul said, wasn't it? I died in him. And I've got to intimately know and feel the suffering and the pain that he felt. I'm not talking about driving nails through you. I'm talking about feeling the pain and rejection that he felt. He said, when you uncover his feet and lay down, you reckon I'm denying myself? You reckon that's what it'd be? I'd be denying myself if I lay down there, won't I? That means I'm identifying with his death and burial. Do you hear me? I'm identifying with that's what you're doing. You're identifying. And then look what it says. What did he say? He'll tell you what to do. Oh my. See, the people who want to read the letter of the word, you go lay down where he laid down, and he'll tell you what to do. No, when you die, guess what happened? Your mind ain't there no more. The only mind you got left is the mind of Christ. And guess what it'll do? It'll give you all the direction that you need. Do you see it? Come on, we've got to see that this mind has passed away. You've buried this carnal thing. And now, he'll tell you what to do. You've put on the mind of Christ. Don't be conformed to this age, to this world, but be you transformed by the renewing of your mind. So you'll know the perfect will of God. See? Oh my, it's beautiful. And she said unto her, there's the soul speaking again, all that thou sayest unto me I will do. This is someone that's prepared. I'm ready. What do you want me to do? Here I am, send me, Lord. Isn't that what the book says? Did Isaiah say that? Here I am, send me. Isn't that what we should be crying in our heart? See, it's not, can I go do it? But I'm ready. The song we sang this morning, right out of Isaiah. Take the coal, cleanse my lips. Here I am. See? That's all it is. It's when God has taken the fire off the altar and laid it on your lips, your mouth, your words, and cleansed your words, guess what you're ready to do? Here I am, send me. I'm ready. And ain't gonna be no volunteer in this stuff. When you speak those words, you'll know it. No volunteers in this thing. God has chosen. And she went down to the floor. She's prepared, isn't she? She went in humility and did according to all that her mother-in-law had bade her. See, there's a time when the law was necessary in our lives. It even says in Galatians that we're all under the law, under tutors and governors, until the time appointed of the Father. There's a time. The law is good for us. The law gave us... Paul even said this, I didn't even know that some of these things were bad until I had the law. I didn't know covetousness was bad until the law said, thou shalt not. And then I realized, oh my, I've got things in me that shouldn't be there. See? We can't condemn the law. The law showed us some things. It showed us our error. But the law did not give us a way out of it. There's the only thing with the law. It only revealed the things we had wrong with us. That's where the condemnation comes from. But when we come under the new covenant, God shows us the way out. He's always got a way of escape, hasn't he? He didn't put anything on us without a solution to get there, to how to replace that problem that was in our life. Even when the world was in sin and was in its fleshly way of thinking, Doesn't the book say that he was the lamb that was slain before the foundation or the conception of the world? Before Adam had made his mistake, he was already slain. The sacrifice was there. The price was paid. So he said, when he died on that cross, he wasn't just coming on there then to straighten things up. The solution had been made, and we were bought with a price before the foundation of the world. I'm not going to look at this thing and say, well, it just happened 2,000 years ago. He said he did it before the foundation of the world. In God's heart, in the Spirit, he was slain. That lamb was slain for us. It was prepared before the foundation. And I'm not going to believe it any other way. I know he did it before it ever came about. He had the solution. And everything in our lives, when we've come to understand that God is in control of this thing, it's not something that men are trying to perpetrate to take advantage of you. This is God's preparation before the foundation of the world. He has taken care of us, and we trust in Him. You don't have to worry about anything else. Trust God and just obey what He wants us to do. That's all you have to do. He said, I'd rather have obedience than sacrifice. She went down to the floor. She'd done everything in verse 6 that she was told to do. And when Boaz had eaten and drank, this was him finishing his last supper. You see that? When he had eaten and drunk, and he took, this was his last supper and his crucifixion. The cup that he said to remove from him was this cup of suffering. And he already drank of it. Oh my God. Whew. He went to lie down. Wondering what that might be. He went to the burial. At the end of the heap of what? What is that grain? See, at the end of the word, what did he say? Finished. What did he do? He laid in a tomb. Come on. Can you see it? God just shows you. At the end of the grain, at the end of the word, the last word he said was what on the cross? Finished. So they laid him down in the tomb. That's all. Oh, God, look at the beauty he has buried in here. And she came, what? Literally, secretly, and uncovered his feet and laid down. Remember what he said? Don't let anybody know about me being here. When God does things in your heart, it is not done openly. It is done secretly. And when you come and lay down in humility before Christ, he will and you uncover his feet, his lifestyle. It's going to be something secret that happens in your life. Nobody else is going to know about it. Not yet. Not yet. It's going to be something done deep within your heart, and nobody will know it. And you'll be walking around says, like a woman that's pregnant saying, can't you tell? Can't you tell? I want to tell you something, but I'm wanting somebody to recognize I'm a child. And that's where you have to come. But you have to have patience and know that sometime it's going to come out. They're going to see you. With child. Hang on. And she laid down. She died to herself. And it came to pass where? Midnight. In the midst of the ignorance. See, in the midst of our ignorance. This is when God is going to come into our lives. That the man was startled and turned himself, and behold, a woman lay at his feet. Now, I'm not looking at this natural stuff. I'm telling you what's going on in the Spirit. See? You're going to lay down at his feet in the midst of your ignorance. You're going to see something. How many of us, when God starts dealing heart, knew what was going on? All we know is God's upset my whole lifestyle. Everything that I put stock in as being foundational to hold me and support me in this world, just don't cut it anymore. All of a sudden, we know in our heart, we know in our spirit, but we can't explain it. There's just something that just draws you in. See, God draws you. No man can come to God except the Spirit draw him. See? And here she's being drawn in. Even in the ignorance, in the midst of midnight, in the middle of the night, she doesn't know what's going on, but all she knows is she saw her man. She saw her man. And that's our soul when we get a glimpse of the true Christ in our life. Not this make-believe stuff they preach in Passover and Pentecost, but the reality of His beauty. Oh, my. And He said, who are you? Who are you? Do you think God said, who are you to Ruth and didn't know who she was? He was trying to reveal her identity to her. See, we got it all turned around. God's not the one mistaken here with a mistaken identity. It's us. And see, my woman, Ruth, inside of me, didn't know who she was until one day God said, "Where are you, son? Where are you, Adam? Who are you? Don't you know who you are? Weren't you with me when we sang together before the foundation of the world? Come on." Oh, geez. He said, "Who are you, Ruth? Don't you really know who you are?" And she answered, "I'm Ruth, your handmaiden. I'm your friend." That's what Ruth means, friend. "I'm with you. I'm your friend. You remember what he told Peter? Do you love me? Do you agape me?" Peter said, "Yeah, phileos you. I like you. You're my friend. You're a pretty good friend. Peter, do you love me?" "Lord, you know you're my phileos. You're my friend. Peter, do you love me?" Peter said, "Yeah, Lord, you know I phileos you. You know, I like you." He couldn't say it. You know why? Because Peter had not yet the intimacy. Although he walked with the natural man who had the Christ within him, he never had the intimate relationship with him. He never did. Not in the natural. He never got close to him. See? But he's trying to show us here, the only way there to the Holy of Holies, through the threshing floor, the Holy of Holies, is that intimate relationship. We got to have it. We can't be without it. See? God is not an external God. He's an internal God. He's working inside of us. Right? Where am I at? He said, "Who are you? You're my friend. Really, what is your identity?" This is what he's trying to reveal to you. Your identity. Okay? She said this, "Spread therefore your skirt over your handmaiden, because you are a near kinsman," or "you are my redeemer." Here is someone, this is a time in our life when we realize that he is my nearest friend. He is my kinsman. He is my redeemer. And she says, "Spread your what over me? Your righteousness." See? "Put your righteousness upon me." See, when a husband and a wife are married, the two become what? Okay? So we got the oneness here. And I have to become one with my husband. Is that not intimacy? My woman has to become intimate with my man to make us become one. And then we become fruitful. And until that point, there is no fruit in our lives. And all through Passover and Pentecost, they said, "Oh, you're growing in leaps and bounds and you have such fruit in your life." Hogwash, you don't have any. You ain't even got any blossoms on the end or buds on the end of your branches yet. That doesn't come until tabernacles. There comes their fullness. Fruit doesn't come in Passover and Pentecost. Fruit comes in your tabernacles. But of course, they're telling you out of the intellectual thing they know. That's all. They think it's fruit. They don't know what fruit is yet. But they will. And he said to her, "You are blessed of the Lord." Hello. When you start realizing who God is in your life, God will tell you who you are, and he will reveal to you that you are a blessed person. We're not talking about this man-woman thing. We're talking about you, an individual person, with the woman in you, your soul, and the Christ in you. When you become united, you won't have to worry about somebody out there telling you you're blessed. You know why? You will know. When you know who you are, and you have that intimacy, you have your identity, and your intimacy with your Christ, you don't have to have somebody tell you. You won't rely on a friend to say, "Hey, you're a pretty good person." You know why? Because you know it's not you. And you'll know it's Christ in you. And you'll know that relationship that you have, and nobody has to tell you about it. You don't have to tell somebody if you're intimate with your husband or wife. You know when you're intimate, don't you? See? You don't have to have somebody else tell you you're doing okay. You already know it. Because God has written it in your heart long before this all started. He said, "You're blessed, my daughter, because you have showed more kindness
in the latter end than at the beginning. Insomuch as thou followest not young men. Right? Romans 7 talks about the woman who was married to another man. And if she doesn't, if her husband's dead, she's free to marry another. Right? Well, see, this is when I realize something. We have been married to our Adamic thinking, our carnal mind. Have we not? We've been married to this thing because we believed what it was telling us. This mind says, oh, we love you. Oh, your mind will tell you, oh, I love you. You're all right. You're a good guy, but you're no good. See, that double-mindedness. It can't work in God's kingdom. We have to realize, this is my man. This is my man. He's always been my man. And that other man came in and caused me to be an adulterer. He made my thinking be like the world. My book says he's never left or forsaken us. Now, if he's never left us or forsaken us, guess what? That means he had to be resident in me the entire time I have been. See? The church wants to tell you, oh, God's not in you. That's a lie. God has always been in you. He will never leave you. He has never left. We have only left him in our thinking process and thought, he wasn't my man. Oh my. We've been married, but we've been running with another man. We've all been adulterers in our thinking process. And we believe that other man is telling us the truth. But the truth is, the other man is dead. My book says Jesus was the last Adam, and he died on a cross 2,000 years ago. I don't have to listen to other man no more. Dead people can't talk. I don't listen to dead thoughts in my head anymore. The reason I don't listen to them is because the other man I am married to. I realize my identity now. I am married to Christ. My woman is married to him. We've become one. There is no other man in my life any longer. That's the only way that you can ever get out of this stinking thinking. You've got to know your woman's married to Christ. You got to. There's no other way out. As long as we think there is another man, you can never be faithful. Never. It's got to come to this, that you understand that I'm only faithful to him. Oh, geez. And now, my daughter, fear not. I will do to you all that you require or all that you ask for, because all the city of my people does know that you are a virtuous woman. That word virtuous means you're a strong, forceful woman. There's nothing wrong with a woman being strong and forceful. We're talking about her soul. But she's strong and forceful in her husband, in her man. She's not doing it in her soulish realm. She's united to her husband. Now she's become one. And she's got the strength that he has. See, my wife has all the strength I have because all she has to do is say something and I'm there. Right? The same thing. All that she asks, I'm there to provide for her in all the ways that I can. And that's what he's saying here. In anything you need, you just ask. Right? When I become one with him, I become intimate with him. How can I deny my wife anything? Come on, can you? Can you deny your spouse anything once you become one with them? No way. And that's what he's trying to tell us. When this woman knows her man intimately, baby, you're in there. And everybody will know that you're a strong woman. They'll know that in your soulish realm, you have united with Christ. And it's no longer you, but it's the Christ and you united as one. The perfect God-man that God started from the very beginning. That perfect God-man from Genesis chapter 1. Oh, God, I could preach this all day. And now it is true that I am your near kinsman. I'm your near kinsman redeemer. Howbeit there is a kinsman nearer than I. Now watch this. He says, tarry this night, tarry in this darkness. It's okay. And with time, he said, it shall be in the morning when the day star arises in your heart, that if he will perform unto you the part of a kinsman, well, let him do it. Okay? So wait through the ignorance, and when that day star arises, the natural man is going to have an opportunity. Because this other man here is the one that's closer than he is at the present. Okay?
This is the natural man. This is your thinking process. But he says, don't worry about anything. If he'll do it, fine. But if not, as the Lord liveth, lie down until the morning. He said, I'll take care of everything. If you just stay here till the morning. Stay with your man in your ignorance, your darkness. This is your time to become intimate until the day star rises in your heart. Remember, you don't understand what God's doing in your life until something happens. And He does it when we're in total ignorance. Nobody comes to Him and says, hey, we understand everything now, God. Okay, now I'm ready. This is something God does in secret and intimacy in your heart, and nobody else knows about it, do they? And all of a sudden, something will start to come.